And Larry said, I know most of you haven't gone to college here. I'm going to save some of my remarks for the sermon hour, because we have a lot to cover and not ever enough time to cover it. So really so glad to be here. We're going to have, in this period, a discussion about truth, because I was talking with Lenny about what we would talk about while I'm here, and I suggested some lessons about discipleship, and he also asked for something about the Holy Spirit. So we're going to talk about the Holy Spirit a little bit tonight, and it all is going to tie in together in the theme of discipleship and what it means to be a disciple. All right? You want to turn that on? So, now there?
No.
It's worse. My wife, when she had one of those, could turn me off. Well, it's going to be a great thing, yeah. Are we good? Alright, good. Alright, so we're going to look at John chapter 8, and you already know this verse, but we're going to talk a lot about truth. I've always been intrigued, why do more people become Christians? You ever wonder that? Because our ultimate goal is to share the gospel because we believe it's the power of God and the salvation. And it's intriguing why so many people choose not to follow Christ. And it's not because Christianity is a small faith, it's the largest faith in the world. And it's not because it's not growing, it is growing faster than any other faith, and now the Muslim faith is catching up. But around the world, it's growing in China and Africa, in leaps and bounds. It's not because Christianity is without reason or evidence to back it up. In fact, it's the only faith that demands you to look at the evidence before you have a conviction that Jesus is the Christ. It's not because there's not a need for salvation and for a hope for something better than just this miserable life we live on this earth. That was our discussion on the way down. Life is so short, isn't it? That when it's done, you're like, wow, that was not much, was it? And so why don't people, more people than do, come to Christ? Now, we shouldn't be surprised, because Jesus said it would be this way, right? What would be some texts or some things that he said that would indicate that the way it would be? Do you remember? I'm sorry?
Broad
is the way that leads to life, or, no, not to life, but what?
Destruction.
To death and destruction. How many are found on that way? Many. But few are on that narrow path that leads to life. Now, the reason there's many on the broad path is it's easy. You can do whatever you want, believe whatever you want, you can stay on that path. But truth is exclusive, isn't it? Truth is very narrow-minded. And you have to put one foot in front of the other, because if you go to the right or the left, you have left the truth. And that's one of the reasons that we'll deal with in this hour of why so many people choose not to follow Christ. Because they don't want to be accountable to truth and to Jesus. They don't want to be, in their mind, confined to a set pattern of behavior. Because especially in America, we want to be free. We want free. And freedom, to most Americans, especially in our today's culture, means the total absence of any type of restraint. In other words, I'm allowed, this is freedom's definition, to do whatever I choose to do without any constraints at all that are placed upon me by anyone. Now, we're going to demonstrate that as we kind of go through this whole idea about truth and what discipleship is all about. So, I have to push this button. It'll be a while before I get used to your tech. Oh, look, we even got a... There we go. So, John chapter 8, verse 31 and 32. Jesus says this, and we know the scripture, many of you have memorized it. If, it's a conditional statement, you continue in my word, then you're a true disciple. And we're going to talk about discipleship in the worship hour. But also, you're going to know the truth, and this is what's exciting, the truth will set you free. And that's what we would talk about as we just go through this idea of why there is so few people that want to follow the truth. Now, the 3 points we want to cover is, first of all, truth is more confusing than you might realize. More people are just, they don't know what to do when it comes to the topic of truth. They're confused about it, but yet it's still more important than most people realize. Without truth, life just becomes a mess. And then the third point, truth is easier to find than you might think. And these are simple points, but they're profound, I think. As we go through them, I hope you see the same. So first of all, there's a whole lot of confusion about truth in the world in which we live. Now, we're not going to be talking from the Bible. We're going to be talking about our culture today. But there's five approaches that people take to truth today. And you probably relate to all of them. You'll find it in schools, the universities, at work, and in the media. But the first approach is, there is no absolutes. Everything is relative. But that's the common thought that's propagated in our society today. And you probably give examples yourself. Now what this means is, everything's relative, and that means whatever you want to believe, it's okay because there are no absolutes. Now absolute means it's true, and it has been true, and it always will be true, and if it's true for me, it's also that by definition must be true for you. Now when you remove absolutes, do you have truth at all? It's impossible because they're contradictory. Now, do you see anything wrong with this statement? By itself. Just yourself. There are no absolute truths. I'm sorry? Well, that's why, okay, I kind of follow you, that she's saying, but there's something about that statement, there's a problem with it.
Well, it contradicts the Bible.
Well, it doesn't contradict the Bible. How does it contradict itself? That's what she said.
There are no absolute truths, meaning that the no in there, I mean, it just, it doesn't work.
What is the statement? Is this a truth statement?
No,
it's not true, but it is a true statement.
Right.
It's a claim, isn't it? There are no absolute truth. That's a true statement. Now, we can debate whether it's valid or not, but it is a true statement, and it's contradictory. Because if there are no true statements, then what do we know about that statement? It's not true either. We are left with nothing. It's nonsensical. Do you see that? And so that's what's like, I want you to understand. It negates itself. Now the second approach to truth is the scientific. Let's just let science decide for us what truth is. And people go, man, that makes sense. Now science can tell us a lot, right? It tells us that water freezes at 33 degrees. Is that true pretty much everywhere around the world? You know, at certain elevations, right? It also can tell you that if you're standing on a cliff and you jump, the gravitational pull will accelerate your body, your mass, at 32 feet per second. Now, is that right? And can science tell us that? But can science tell you if you should push someone off that cliff or not? Why not? Well, it's more than a human decision. What is he trying to say?
The moral decision.
The moral decision. They didn't tell you what it will take to push them. They'll tell you how fast they'll fall or she. They'll tell you how long it'll take them to hit the ground. And they can tell you the person will die given enough height. But can science tell you anything about whether you should or should not push them? No. There's no value of help to us at all. That's where science and our society has really changed. Because science used to be a discovery of God's ordered world. God has an ordered world, and science was a discovery of how it works, gravitational pull, all of this. But now our culture has moved into science now and trying to tell you right or wrong. and it has no validity or help, it can't help us in that area at all. The third approach is the pragmatic approach. Since everything's relative, and you can't find your true statements on me, then how am I going to decide what I'm going to use for my own truth? Well, basically, it's whatever that works. So if something is lying, is going to be advantageous for me today, guess what I'll do? I'll lie. Now, can you tell me that's wrong for me to lie? If there are no absolutes? No. See? That's the problem with you. You're narrow-minded, and you're an absolutist. This is why so many people, I'm glad I picked it out of you, so many people, because they're filled with this nonsense that we're going over, and I call it nonsensical because it makes no sense. And when you tell them you're a Christian, they go, oh, you're people who make truth claims. You think they're absolute. And you think anyone that disagrees with you is wrong. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Right? And that's why they're going to turn their ears off to us before we even get a chance to share Christ. Because of all these attitudes that the world uses. One out of six teenagers, 16%, say they made the choices on basis of whatever produced the most beneficial results. 83% of them said moral truth depends upon circumstance. That our kids in our society, if they need to lie and steal or do whatever, if it benefits them, it's okay. Alright? 6%, only 6% of our youth in America said there are absolute moral truths. And we wonder why, when we come and share Christ, they don't want to listen. Because they want freedom to decide for themselves what is right or wrong. And that's the fourth approach. It's the individual approach. Truth is what you make it. Since there are no absolutes, science really can't tell us, and it's really circumstantial, truth is you have a placeholder, and it's whatever you want to put in there. So my truth is, have fun in life. That's the only value that I have. My truth is, and you can fill in the blank. And that's the way a lot of people live. If you define truth for yourself, and we have to practice tolerance for everybody's worldview. So in other words, if they have a certain value system, which is true to them, who are you to judge them? Because if you are judging them, you're imposing your value system on them, and we practice tolerance and diversity. Now, how many times have you heard those buzzwords? You get diversity training at work, don't you? Now, if it's ethical, about ethnic, yeah, we shouldn't judge people based on their skin color or their sex. But there are certain areas where not only is it okay to judge, but we must take stance, especially when it comes to morality. So, this is the idea of individual truth. It's interesting. Cornell did a study. They presented people with two identical plates of meat at dinner. Identical. The one plate they were told it was valued at, oops, let's go back, was, hey, I like this. I'm sorry. One was valued at $40, one was valued at $10. And then they were supposed to eat from both and then tell which one tasted better. And you already know the answer. Which one, largely, came out of the winner? Now, it's all because perceived value is based often on monetary cost. Does a person have it within themselves to determine value independently? No. We're influenced by so many things. Of course, the Lord said it's not in man to direct his own steps, correct? We need something larger than bigger than ourselves. The last approach, and you already seen it, is the libertarian approach. The basic libertarian says, let me do whatever I want, no restraints. Because all truth statements are power plays. Now what I mean by a power play is you're trying to how to take control over my life and my freedom by imposing your truth statement upon me. Now there's some validity to that because I'm going to say all truth statements are God's right. And I'll give you an example of that by this right here. What is it called at? Stop time. Can't turn me on this because when we go home, there's a four-way stop a half mile from our house, and often there's no one there, but I have to stop at this stop sign because it's offensive. I go, why do I obey a stupid sign? I mean, it's not a living, breathing thing, it's just a piece of metal. And it stands out there to hold a knife, then you have a light on it. But when I see the word S-T-O-P, what do I always do? Stop! What a power play it has over my life! Now why do I do that? Because it's the law. Well, who makes law? It's just a construct of society. Laws change, so I don't need to obey it. So I want to run that stop sign. Have you yet? I'm not going to. But sometimes I don't want to stop. I want to be free. Do what I want to do. Now, inevitably, someone who runs that stop sign won't allow it. If they do it consistently, they're going to hit a child, a bicyclist, or another car, and they're going to kill them. Right? And so that stop sign is there for a good purpose. But every truth statement is a power play. What I mean by it, God, we were accepting truth comes from Him, imposing His will on us because this is true and all it has been and all it will be. Either you follow it and have a blessed life or you reject it and you're on your own and you have trouble. So I can't deny this. Now, when you look at all this, it's interesting. Is a fish free on dry land?
Fish?
A fish. Is a fish free when it's on dry land? What if the fish said, I'm tired of being in constraints of water. I'm confined. I'm going to be out there in the open air. Yeah. Go ahead. What do you have? A fish can only flourish and have freedom when it's confined to the constraints of water. That's the way truth is. Absolute freedom does not mean there are no truths and you do whatever you want. In fact, that will bring about your demise. But true freedom comes when you understand there are constraints, there are boundaries, both physically and spiritually, and when you learn them, they will set you free. When you ignore them or choose to not learn them, you're doomed to fall into the pit and to trip over yourself and have just problems in life. Now that's going back to our text. Jesus said, if you abide in my word, what? You'll know the truth. Second of all, it'll set you free. Now, let me just give you a practical example of this so you can know how we experience this in our life. How many people like Starbucks? Raise your hand in front. Yeah, all right. That's good. How many people like it but don't want to admit it? Okay, that's what I'm going to say. That's your... All right. That's right. We'll use Starbucks as an example. So, tomorrow morning, you wake up, the kids have been up way late at night, they kept you awake, and you overslept, and got to get to work, you didn't have time for coffee or breakfast. So, on the way to work, you decided to stop by the local Starbucks and drive through and get my cup of morning joe. You get there, and it's a long line. I guess I'll go inside. You hate to go inside, but you park your car and go inside, and now there's a long line there, too. But you take the place in queue, and you just wait. And annoyingly, you're tipping your watch because you're like going to be late to work, and everyone's inside there, and they just sort of talk to the barista. But you just wait, and you wait, and finally you're third in front, you know, waiting to get your order, and some person walks in, and excuse me, and kind of cut right in front of you. And he goes, excuse me, the line begins back here. And the person says, so? Well, it's rude to take cups. And the person says, well, that may be true for you, but it's not true for me. And now you're even more shocked, and you go, well, wait a second. I'm late for work. I need to get my coffee. So please go again live. You know, that's exactly why I took cups, because I'm late too, and it's time for me to get cups. And then now you have it. So you voice your objection to the barista. It says, could you tell this person it's no wrong to get cups and to go back to the line? Now you're shocked because the barista says, you know, we've got this tolerance in this store, and we don't make value judgments to anyone. And you go, what? I've been coming here for years, and you better tell this person. And then they go, what makes you think your whiteness allows you to have first place in line? You walk out the store, and they all clap for you. And you say, that's ridiculous. That would never happen. But is that not the culture in which we live today? That if you speak out about anyone that does something that contrary to given values, you're the intolerant one. You're the judgmental one. You're the bigot. You're the one that's trying to use yourself to exert yourself over others. How do you deal with that? Well, first of all, you don't. Because you can't change Satan. But he's the father of lies, isn't he? And he's going to keep lying and deceiving people as long as he has opportunity to do so. But we understand this isn't going to work because truth is so important. If you don't have it, everything in society breaks down. Just like our little Starbucks example. All culture would break down, commerce, everything would fall apart. There'd be no right or wrong. There's no foundation for condemning evil. There are things when World War II was over, they had a Nuremberg trial. And that was when they prosecuted the Nazi regime and Secret Service over there for their crimes against humanity. But if there are no absolutes, can you prosecute anyone? No. And there's no heroes to root for. And there's no villains to root against. And we know there's no foundation for justice because that's an absolute. There's no way of measuring progress in your kids or in society or in yourself. And there's no basis for confronting intolerance. Because when someone says you're intolerant, they're making a power play, aren't they? See, they're appealing to truth. If there are no truth, there's nothing you can do absolutely. Now, isn't that pretty much the world we live in?
It's depressing.
It is depressing. But I don't want you to be depressed. Alright? It is depressing. And the rest, writing down this path is, again, the question is, why do not more people obey Christ? Because they buy into this nonsense that there are no absolutes, everything's relative. And when we open the Bible and thus saith the Lord, already they begin to roll their eyes. Now, where did this all come from? I'm down at 20 after, correct? We've got a lot of time. Where did all this come from? I'm going to give you a short history lesson. We'll talk about postmodernism. Now, if I ask most people to define postmodernism, their eyes are rolled. They don't know what it is. And that's okay, because it's hard to put a definition on it, actually. But let's talk about it. Just briefly, where did it come from? This is a sidebar discussion. If we see that there's the period of enlightenment in the 18th century, that's where science just took leaps and bounds in discoveries. We had the Industrial Revolution, where things became automated. There were advances in literature. It was what was called the period of enlightenment. It was revolutionary. And it held promise to society to the end of all poverty, all wars, all disease, all civil and domestic strife, because we're learning. And that knowledge is going to put an end to all those problems. Now, how did that work out? No war continued. We had two major ones work, and then poverty still increased, people were still evil, and even though some got rich, the rich got richer, often the poor got poorer. And so that moved from this period of enlightenment into an apathetic attitude towards science and reason. Because tradition has failed us. Science has not cured our ills. And all the things it promised in our modern world has not produced the promised results. So now we've entered into a postmodern era where tradition, values, truth, reason, science is pretty much rejected, largely, and the only value in life is for you to discover your own purpose in life for yourself. And now, that's quite a statement. And how do you know it's true? Interesting, Frederick Nietzsche said this, truth is nothing more than an invention, a fixed convention for merely practical purposes. His approach to truth was pragmatic, right? But it's just an invention, just to make things work. And that's the attitude. Now, when you look at the Supreme Court, and this is in 1992, their case, the Planned Parenthood against Casey. Here's what Justice Anthony Kennedy said. And if this doesn't capitalize our attitude and our culture today, I don't know what else does. At the heart of liberty, that's freedom, right? Is the right to defend one's own concept of your existence. And the meaning of the universe and the mystery of human life. Those are worldview questions. What am I here for? How does the world get here? What's the purpose of life? And the Supreme Court has laid the law down. No one has the right to tell you. You have the right to decide that for yourself. So who becomes God in America if you follow this postmodernism attitude? Who becomes God? The individual. That's the world we're living in. That's how we got there. It rejects all tradition because tradition causes problems. Yes?
Isn't that also the definition of anarchy?
Exactly, because consistency, you know, leads to that. That's why Portland is a weird town, right? They keep pride in it.
Exactly.
It's an anarchy capital because they have bought into this. There are no values. If we want to destroy it, who is for you to say it's wrong? Because it's exactly why it happened. Because kids are not dumb. They've been taught this long enough, they now believe it, and they're practicing it. And that's why I think the Portland, the political powers allow it to happen. You just wonder, why do they allow people to go through and loot and burn things? Because they believe it too. Now, you see it in everything. Postmodern architecture, this is in Prague. Rejection of tradition. And while some of it's amazing, this is Walt Disney Concert Hall in L.A. They're taking everything that used to be defined and traditional, and the more bizarre, the more beautiful. In our music, and in our literature, in our art, here's Picasso. Now, regardless of what you think about postmodern art, is that a rejection of past tradition when it comes to our art? It is. Here's Pollock. Who did that? An adult or a child? You say, oh, that doesn't appreciate art. No, I don't understand it. I'll confess it. All right? But that's postmodern art. How about our music? We met Kurt Vonnegut Jr. when I was in University of Oregon. And it's postmodern literature because it undermines all the values that tradition has passed down. It makes you question everything and define life meaning for yourself. Madonna, did she stretch boundaries? Constantly. Now, who's the new entertainers that do that? Well, Lady Gaga wears suits of meat, right? The more bizarre, the more out there, that's cutting edge. That's expected if you're really with it. And any of us who look at it and roll our eyes, you're intolerant and not right. That's the world in which we live. And I'm sharing this with you so you understand what you're up against when you attempt to share the gospel with someone. Michael Foucault, he's a French philosopher, he said, truth is a thing in this world. It is produced only by virtue of multiple forms of constraint and includes regular effects of power. In other words, he said, it's a power play. It's made by this world. Well, we already talked about that, but I suggest there's more to truth than that. That truth is really not that hard to find. Now, if anyone did this exercise in high school or college, there were six blind monks. They're taken into a room, there's an elephant there. And the six blind monks were asked to tell and report what they were feeling that they couldn't see. Have you ever heard this? So the one monk, well, let's make it more modern, okay? Let's put him in some lab coats. He said, oh, it's a spear, right? Looking at the tongue. Down here, the guy's hanging on to his tail, and he goes, well, it's a rope. And this guy goes, man, I'm holding a tree, because the legs are like trees to this elephant. And of course, the nose, this guy says it's a snake, and the ears are a fan. Now, this is used to illustrate truth is relative. It's only based on your perspective. And you can't know truth in of yourself because it's only based on what you're aware of. And so, who are you to say you know any truth? And it undermines people's values, especially their youth, if you're right. I was told premarital sex was wrong. Maybe that's just narrow-minded, because we're just looking down the little picture. I was told lying was wrong, or stealing, or drugging. Well, maybe they're wrong. No, they're just power plays. Yes.
The thing wrong with this, the truth is, they're blind.
Yeah, but are we blind to the big picture?
That's what I'm saying. They are blind, so because they are blind, they don't know the truth.
And see, that's what they're going to say. You made the point for that. We're all blind to the big picture of the universe, so you can't know truth for yourself. Now, there's a problem with this, and then here close. There's a seventh person in this picture. Who is the seventh person? I know that you're really with this animal or person too, and we want to give them an identity and rights, but I'm not talking about the elephant, okay?
Well, would you classify God as the seventh person?
Who's the seventh person? You are. Everyone that's looking at this picture, they go, yeah, this guy is wrong. How do you know he's wrong? Because you can see what? The whole picture. And you can make the statement, you're wrong, it's not a tree. You're so narrow-minded. You're just trying to make a power play and just restrain people from exploring life and discovering truth for themselves. No, I'm sorry. It's not a tree. It's an elephant. Now, how can you say that? Because you see the whole picture. See, it's deceptive, the whole point. Because to make the original point, you have to be able to see the elephant for itself. And they leave that out. You are the seventh person. Truth is knowable. Truth is discoverable. We have to go to the right place. Now, I take it all the time to build a case or to come back to look at Jesus. Because Jesus claims to be the way, the truth, and the life. Okay? And he says, no man can come to the Father through me. Are those two claims? Are those absolute? He says, unless you believe that I am me, you shall die in your sin. That's a binary choice. If you either believe, or choose not to believe and die. Now, if he is correct, we would do well to submit to what he says. If he is wrong, let's reject him entirely. Right? That's what it is. And so, when we consider what Jesus has to say, I want you to read this quote. If anyone read this book, Rome, let's try it. Okay. Put an interesting thing in it, but you make an interesting point. Mental health requires that humans submit itself to something higher than itself. To function decently in this world, we must submit ourselves to some principle that takes precedence over what we want at any given moment. What is he advocating for? If you want to be happy in life, you need to subscribe to some value system that's bigger than your desires. Where are you going to find that? Because you can't look to communities. The community is just a collection of people, right? Humans. So the community can't decide those values. Government can't decide those values because government is just a collection of more people. You can't look to laws of the land because laws are always changing. Look at America. Look at Oregon. Marijuana used to be detrimental and harmful, now it's legal in our state, isn't it? So does government dictate truth values for us? No, because it's just a collection of people. What he's saying is we have to look at something larger than ourselves because it's not in man to discover truth for themselves. Now we can discover the truth of science. Like the world is round. We don't invent truth, but we can discover God's material world. They used to think the world was flat. But as it more advanced with science, we've understood the fact that the truth is the world is round. Did we invent that truth? And then when that knowledge came, did all of a sudden the world go from flat to just wrapping itself into a curve, a sphere? No, it's always been spherical. We were just ignorant. So science does not invent truth, it discovers the truth of this world. Same way spiritually. You cannot discover truth or invent the future. You can only discover the truth that are already there. And they're only going to be given to us, revealed to us, by someone that lives above the arch. And what I mean by above the arch is this. There's three elements. The Bible was talking about Peter, Paul was taken up into the where? Third heaven. Where's that? The first heaven is where the birds fly. The second heaven are where the stars are. The third heaven is above the arch of the physical world. It's the spiritual realm. And when I say that above the arch, I'm referring to that realm where God exists in all the spiritual beings. And that's where truth comes from because that's where our Creator exists, Jesus Christ, in whom all things were made, on the heavens, in the heavens, and on the earth. And only Jesus can reveal to us what truth is. And that's why when we go all the way back to our text, we're living in a world that's lost and confused. And if we have the truth and access to it in what we have right here, people are desperate to find it. They just don't know it yet. We have to understand what they've been taught so we can defuse them and challenge them with love. Speak the truth with what? Love. Not condemnation. Not with judgment. Because we've all been there. But with love, pointing to that you can know truth. You can know right and wrong. And so, that's what Jesus said. Well, again, we've already referred to these. Jeremiah says, oh man, the way of man is the Lord. Oh man, the way of man is not in himself. It's not in man who walks to direct his own steps. So again, that's why Jesus said, since he's the one that became flesh, God himself, and he was full of grace and truth, right? And then, I think we're up to our verse, our text right here, in chapter 8. Oh, that's chapter 4. I refer to that one. Here we are right here. I'm trying to get to it. If you continue my work. There's three things I want you to point out here. First of all, there's a condition. If you want to learn truth, you have to live in the Word of Christ. Now what does in mean to you? But in versus out. You're in the building, right? When you're in His Word, what would that mean? Abide by it.
Immersed in it.
Immersed in it. Well.
Submit to it.
Submit to it.
Surrounded by
it.
Surrounded by it.
Surrounded by it.
Practice.
Practice it. If you abide, the word abide means live in His Word, does it become your way of thinking? Does His Word now become your value system? that they become your truth system. That His words answer all the big questions of life. How I got here, what I'm here for, what's the purpose, where am I going? If I'm abiding in His word, that's what that will happen over time. And it's a process, isn't it? That's why Paul says in Romans chapter 12, don't be conformed to this world. Because that's what happens. Satan has hijacked our youth and hijacked our adults, and people think like the world thinks. And it says, don't be conformed to the world, but be transformed. How? Finish that verse. Romans 12, verse 2. By the renewing of your mind. The job of us as the preacher is to pull the junk out of our heads and hearts and that Satan has put in there and put in what Christ wants us to know. It's a process, isn't it? And it takes time to do that, doesn't it? It's a continual transformation. But if you continue in His Word, here's the promise. First of all, this is truth special. True is opposed to a poser. You know, the thing that people hate in the world about Christianity, except that they're narrow-minded, they think they have truth. Well, no, we don't. The Lord does. Right? The second thing, they'll say is they're a hypocrite. What? And sadly, there's some truth to that. But it was a genuine disciple that abides in Christ's word. They are a learner of His word so they can practice it in their lives. Now, let me make another statement about faith in Christ. Because when you come to Christ, the Bible refers to a person that's been born out of the world and into Christ's kingdom as a babe, right? And they're supposed to long for the pure milk of word by which they may grow in respect to salvation. Do babes in Christ know all of Christ's word? Do they have bad behavior still that they brought into the church from the world? Their language, their lifestyle, their attitude, right? Should we judge the church by the babies? Because what do babies do in the physical world? I don't see any babies in here, there's one back there. Babies can be the cutest thing and the most annoying things that you have. Because all they want to do when they're not being cute is cry and what they want to eat, and then they cry because they want to poop, and that's all they do, is eat and poop. And that's true, isn't it? But they're so cute. We wouldn't throw the baby off. Same thing with church. Spiritual babies, do you want to judge the church by what you see in the babies? It's okay. They will do things wrong. That's okay. Because they're in the right place. They're growing. They're transforming themselves. Now let me say this. If you said, I tried Christianity, it doesn't work. As you really abide in His word, are you trying to conform to what the church, the Lord has you to do? Conform means, I'll just do what He says. My heart's not in it, but I'll just conform. No, He says, don't conform, but what? Transform. That's from the inside out. I do it because I understand it's the right thing to do, and Jesus said, I will submit to His word, and I want to do it. That's when it works. Because then He says, you'll be true disciples, and you'll know the truth by practice. You're like, when it is true. And that truth will make you free. A freedom you've never experienced before. Let me just throw out a warning. Sometimes we get in discussions with ourselves or others that go along this line. I'll take premarital sex. So I did that when I was young. Does God condemn premarital sex? Is that a truth statement? God's wrath will come upon all of morality, right? He condemns it. And God's will for us is our sanctification. We abstain from immorality. My question was, if these people love each other and they're not married, what's wrong with that? I don't understand. And that's what I was young. In other words, with understanding of why God said something, I'm going to be more inclined to obey. Now, don't get me wrong. it's good for us to understand why God says what he says. But can you understand everything he asked you to do and his motivation for it? All of us. No. Can babies understand when you say, don't play in the street? No. When they grow up, they will understand it. There are certain things you cannot understand at certain ages spiritually. And if your submission to Christ is based upon your understanding, is he your Lord? If your submission to the will of Christ is based upon your understanding his word, like, well, I agree, that makes sense. Is he your Lord? If I don't understand, I'm not going to obey. Is he my Lord? Whether you
understand it all or not.
There you go.
And that's the argument I used with our daughter when she was trying to decide it. You don't have to know all the answers now. As you grow, you will learn. So what are you waiting for?
Right.
She got that.
If we believe who Jesus is, and he's the author of all truth, we'll obey him and listen to him whether we understand why he says what he does or not. That's accepting Jesus Christ when his word abides in us. When I have to understand and agree with it, I'm still Lord of my own life. Right? I determine the truth myself. Now, we want to grow in understanding, but our job as Christians is just to learn.